Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, which is brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Matt Barnes is going to join us upcoming in the show. Longtime NBA veteran. Of course, you see him on Fox Sports 1. You hear him on Fox Sports Radio. So too will Nick Wright. Landry Shamet, who is, of course, a rookie guard who was drafted by the Philadelphia 76ers, traded around the trade deadline for Tobias Harris, part of the Tobias Harris trade, hit a big three to give the Clippers a road win, their first road win of the playoff season. He'll join us in a couple hours. So too will Antonio Daniels, who's a former San Antonio Spur, played a bunch of teams in the NBA, longtime Spur. He'll join us. So we'll talk a lot of hoop today. We do have some football. The Steelers feel like the old married couple that's decided to start dating again, each other again. Going to talk some Arizona Cardinals. We're getting ready for the NFL draft. What are we, a week and a day away from the NFL draft? And they say they have not solidified their plans. Do we believe them? But let's start with the Oklahoma City Thunder, who I thought coming into the season, roster alone, like, man, that's a team, could be the second best team in the West. And if things go right, you know, something crazy like, I don't know, an injury to DeMarcus Cousins, if things go right, well, they could very easily be the best team in the West. Like, I like their roster on paper. The problem with sports is it's not played on paper. It's played inside television sets. And when you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder and their recent struggles shooting the basketball, you sit there and go, like, wait a second. This team can't shoot. Russell Westbrook can't shoot. Now, there's a couple points that are really important, very, very important, that should be made. The first is this. And this is important. We get caught up. Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double for his third consecutive season. And what you're going to hear from people is, we'll never see that again because we've never seen it since. Never seen it before. And there's some accuracy to that, right? There's some accuracy to it. Like, I'm not sure we'll see anyone, but he still dominates the basketball. Possessions are at an all-time high. So when your usage rating is high and the possessions are up, there's a greater volume of shots, which creates kind of fictitious numbers in historical comparison for rebounds and assists, and frankly, for points. And oh yeah, by the way, no one's really cared that much about averaging a triple-double. Was it possible before? Will it be possible since? I'm not sure. But what matters is Russell Westbrook shooting just 29% from three for the regular season, and those numbers are not climbing. Generally, this is again, generally, and there's nothing broken about how his shot looks. Generally, with a not broken shot, you're steadily going to progress to becoming a mid-30s three-point shooter. As you get older, as you lose your legs, you become a better shooter. That's like basketball 101. But he struggled with his jump shot the entire season, and this is not a great three-point shooting team. On the other hand, they are not as bad a three-point shooting team as they have shot so far in the playoffs. Jeremy Grant can't buy a bucket, and he's a 39% three-point shooter in the regular season, and in the efforts to play small ball to match up with the Portland Trailblazers, he's missed everything. I think the pressure of the games, as well as playing on the road and playing some without Westbrook, and then Paul George not making jump shots, I think it's been a culmination of things which have allowed the Thunder to fall 2-0 down to the Portland Trailblazers and have such atrocious numbers shooting the basketball. Here's Russell Westbrook after falling to 0-2 against the Trailblazers. Quote, starting with myself, I've got to play better. And tonight, after the loss, I'm going to take full responsibility for tonight because the way I played was unacceptable. I'm going to be better, so I'm not worried one bit. You know who else is not worried one bit? This guy, me. I'm just not. Right? Like, it's a law of averages, and while they're not a good three-point shooting team and they're shooting a high volume of three-point shots, they're not this bad a three-point shooting team. Does it put a ton of pressure on them? Yeah. Yeah, it does. Let's also remember that even though there is no Nurkic for the Portland Trailblazers, they were the three seed for a reason. Damian Lillard is much better at home than he is on the road. And if they win two games at home and they put the pressure back on the Portland Trailblazers, all you got to do is win one road game in order to steal home court advantage and win a playoff series. The troubling part to Westbrook, and maybe the troubling part to the entire organization, is he's not getting better as a shooter. He's not. And everyone in the sport seems to be getting better at shooting three-point shots, except for Russell Westbrook. Right, like, Brook Lopez went from a low-post player to a three-point shooter. Look at everyone else's progression. Whereas Westbrook shot 29.8% from three last year, 34.3% the previous year, 29, 29.9, 31.8, and this year, 29% from three. And he's not the lone superstar on this team. There were a lot of people who said, hey, Westbrook, he's really learned to play with others. He's really learned to play with others. Or he's taking the same volume of shots, right? He's taking one fewer shot per game. He's just shooting a lower percentage. Yes, he's averaging one more assist a game. Excuse me, 0.4 more assists per game, one more rebound per game. He's still a high turnover guy. He's still a high volume guy. He's still a high usage guy. He's just not improving as a shooter. You know, it's like Cam Newton, right? Like, oh, well, you know, Cam Newton, it's the system, it's this, it's the throws. It's like, look, Cam Newton is a below 60% completion thrower. Was his shoulder screwed up yet last year? Sure, I'll give you that. He's got shoulder problems. But you tell me the season where all of a sudden he was completing close to 70% of his passes. It's not like when you're consistently inconsistent, you're consistently inconsistent. You're not just inconsistent. Am I making sense? I'm looking at Ramos, and Ramos's head spinning. He's like, yes, that makes total sense. Oh, well, you know, listen, if he ever gets consistent, like, no, he's not. You know why? Because it's not like I have 2 years of data, right? The prime years of Russell Westbrook are, you know, mid to low 40s field goal percentage, low 30s to high 20s three-point percentage. And this year, you know, the big reason he's averaging fewer points per game, shooting less free throw, shooting a lower free throw percentage. So he's driving a little bit less, settling a little bit more. He's shooting just 65% from the free throw line. He's going the opposite way. And it's really, look, as a guy who lived in professional basketball at times without a jump shot, it's a hard way to live. And if your team isn't constructed perfectly around it, like the Milwaukee Bucks are, for example, it just, you know, I mean, think about it. The Bucks, no, they have their point power forward is Giannis. He's not a good shooter. So they got a three-point shooting center to go with him. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they have Steven Adams, not a three-point shooter, not a shooter of any kind. So some of it is construction of the team. Some of it is water will find its level, and I'm sure they're going to win a game or two games here in Oklahoma City. But some of it is like, look, Russell Westbrook kind of is what he is. He ain't what he ain't. And when you're consistently inconsistent, you're consistently inconsistent.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Matt Barnes joins us, former UCLA Bruin. Did you know about this, the tax stuff that has really hindered UCLA before they end up hiring Mick Cronin?
Yeah, no clue. I mean, I just learned a lot by listening to you. It's very interesting. I'm sure a lot of people, 90% of the audience, didn't know that.
Yeah, they're sitting there going like, just pay it.
Right.
All right, let's get to what we saw last night. Charles Barkley's like, look, why are they taking so many threes? The Thunder are not a good three-point shooting team, but they're not terrible. Is this them falling into the trap of shooting threes against Portland? Is this water will find its level and eventually they'll make them? Or do you think they're a terrible team shooting terrible shots? What's your takeaway for the Thunder?
I think the you get caught up in the other team's game because they're very effective at it. And normally, you know, PG is knocking down shots pretty consistently. You know, Russ can get hot here and there. You know, Schroeder shoots well, but it's just a little different in the playoffs. You know, the rims are a little tighter. You know, you're a little more up chase. You know, you're a little more frantic, realizing, you know, four losses send you home. So it's a combination, I think, of a lot of different things. One, mainly being they're not a very good three-point shooting team. But at the same time, I mean, Portland did what they're supposed to do. You know, they won the first two games, you know, so there's no reason why OKC can't go back home feeling more comfortable with a little bit of rest and win the next two games. So, it's still anybody's series.
I tend to agree with you, right? They always say a playoff series doesn't start, or maybe it ends if Portland does steal a game on the road. What about the juxtaposition? Like, we're watching Damian Lillard, who's a great shooter, and he's playing at a ridiculously high level, even without Nurkic. Whereas you're watching Russell Westbrook, who's been an NBA MVP, average a triple-double, but he's had a season-long shooting issue at the free throw line. And, you know, usually, Matt, when guys get older, they shoot better. They lose a step, but they gain, you know, basketball IQ and game wherewithal, but they also shoot the basketball better. It's an interesting juxtaposition watching them, too, where Lillard has outplayed him in the first two games.
No, there's no question. And to me, Damian Lillard is the most underrated player in the league. I mean, he's recognized and he's been an all-star the last few years. But for real, how good he really is, how well he really shoots the ball, the kind of leader he is, the way he, you know, he's a silent assassin. You know, you don't hear too much from him, but I hear he's nothing but, you know, he leads the team in the right direction. I think he kind of floats under the radar. You know, he's out in Portland. You know, you don't see him on very many commercials, but he is, you know, arguably one of the best point guards in the NBA. And I think as far as Russ's shooting lows, I just think it's one of those seasons. I mean, everything you said is right. The older you get, your body slows down. You know, you concentrate more on the mechanics and actually becoming a better shooter. And I just think this is one of those seasons where it's just been a bad shooting year. And everyone's talking about it. Everyone's saying something about it. And, you know, hopefully he comes back next year and he gets back to normal, at least from the free throw line. And, you know, he's still Russell Westbrook. And I, like I said, I think we don't understand what we're witnessing when we watch him. You know, we're witnessing history. The last 3 years, he created NBA history. And I think we get lost sometimes because he doesn't like to talk after games, or he yells at the crowd or whatever. But he's still an amazing player.
No, he's an amazing player, but the numbers, the shooting numbers, it is odd that he hasn't taken kind of that next step as a shooter. Matt Barnes joining us here in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. You talk about it's like two different guys, Kyle Lowry 1 to Kyle Lowry 2. I mean, look, on paper, the Raptors should be better this year in the playoffs than they were last year. Whatever you think of DeRozan, who's a terrific player, Kawhi's better, right? And they add Danny Green, who's got championship pedigree, and yet they lose game one at home to Orlando. Can we just that's just one bad game, or do you think there's something missing there with this Toronto team?
I just think it's one bad game, and I think, you know, Kyle Lowry's in his own head. And, you know, their game one records and you know, over the past few years haven't been that good, and he hasn't been very consistent. But, you know, what I chalk it down to one bad game. Sometimes you need to get slapped in the face to wake up, but at the same time, for all the reasons you mentioned as well, you know, they have Danny Green now, they have Kawhi Leonard, proven championship winners, they have Marc Gasol, who's a veteran center. Siakam's a young up-and-coming star. You know, they got Serge coming off the bench, they got Van Fleet. So they have a very deep team. You know, to me, it kind of hinders as far as they go on how consistent Kyle Lowry can be. You know, if you're paid as much money or you're a consistent all-star, you have to show up in the playoffs. So they have all the pieces. That's why in game one, you know, I didn't think too much of it because they have so many other pieces that can help them do what they need to do. But I think for them to go as far as they possibly can, which I feel possibly is the NBA Finals, Kyle Lowry has to be an elite point guard.
How does losing DeMarcus Cousins affect the Warriors?
I think more emotional than anything. You know, it's just such an unfortunate situation. You know, him working so hard to get back, you know, coming to the Warriors the way it happened, and then for him to be in the second playoff game 4 minutes in and tear his quad, you just feel bad for the guy. You know, and I know, you know, guy's heart's heavy or over there for him. But what I will say is you're definitely going to miss him. You know, someone as talented as he is, you know, I figured he'd win a few games at some point during the playoffs by his play alone, by his singular play alone. The one thing that the Warriors have on their side is but outside of this year, they've never had a center that was a focal point of their championship runs. You know, so I think if any team can rebound, this makes the Bogut signing that much bigger. Mooney has to continue to play well. You know, he had a career high in game two. So I think by committee, playing small ball, I think they'll possibly be able to cover up for what DeMarcus brought them, but there's no doubt they're going to miss him.
Yeah, and then, you know, the Houston Rockets are the team waiting for them. Last time they matched up with the Houston Rockets, DeMarcus was awesome. And so, I think he makes them worse defensively, but he gave them an additional offensive weapon. Mm-hmm. And so now, and then, you know, now they're going to count on Iguodala more and Livingston more, and I just don't know how much those guys have in the tank in comparison to what they've always had in the tank.
Yeah, well, I think the one good thing is that they played, you know, this season they didn't play as many minutes as they've had in the past. I think they've done a good job of continuing to monitor minutes and sitting them during the season, so that for a situation like this, if they need to, you know, up their minutes in the playoffs, I think they'll be all right. But that's the one thing I said at the beginning of the season, was the lack of depth was the only thing that worried me with the Warriors. You know, you have guys that can come off the bench and play, but they don't have that normal depth they had on previous championship teams. So, like I said, losing DeMarcus is going to be a big hit. But I think by committee, they'll be able to rally up. And it's just not going to be – the road to 3 in a row is never easy. You know what I mean? And this is just part of the hiccup, you know, losing DeMarcus in the second game. It's just going to be a part of their story, you know, whether their stars can rally the rest of the team and make this push and continue the three-peat. I think they can.
What's your take on Philadelphia? Obviously, you have a team in Brooklyn which spread them out, shot a bunch of threes. Second game, they score 145 points and seem to answer back. What do you think of Philadelphia's prospects in the playoffs?
Philly is one of those scary teams where they realize how good they can be. You know, to me, outside the Warriors, there's not a better starting five on paper than Philly. I just think they lack chemistry for whatever reason that is, you know, adding so many pieces at the times they added and the characters they have, you know, with Embiid being, you know, such a big personality. But there's times where you see their flashes and you see them click, and you, even though they may not like each other all the time, you see that, like, them light up when they do stuff well. So if they can really kind of tunnel in on being a team and realizing their potential, Philly's someone that can make the finals in the Eastern Conference. There's no question about it. But I think as Toronto's hopes ride on Lowry, I think 76ers hopes ride on Ben Simmons. You know, mm-hmm. He's someone that has to be consistent. I think from being a good player to a great player, it's just consistency. And you know, you saw a young Ben Simmons in game one, and you saw someone who imposes well and had a triple double in game two.
If you were the Lakers and you had a choice, you got three choices, right? You got Monty Williams, who everybody likes, but not really connected with the LeBron family. You got Tyronn Lue, who I think everybody likes. He actually played for the Lakers, but he is connected with LeBron and with Rich Paul. Or you could wait, hire a president, take a breath, see what the landscape is.
Right.
What would you do?
I think Plan B, which you said. To me, it doesn't matter who the coach is if the front office isn't intact. You know, you lose Magic. Genie's going to have to step up. You're handing the keys to Rob Pelinka, which, you know, doesn't have a very good reputation throughout the league. You know, there was rumors of him, you know, being the guy that Magic was talking about when they said backstabbing. So you have a lot of uncertainty in the front office. So, you know, free agent acquisitions don't matter. Coaches don't matter if your front office isn't on the same page.
Great stuff from Matt Barnes. By the way, Matt, you have a cannabis research study with UCLA, right, to combat opioid effects related to athletes, right? So the idea is, like, look, cannabis is legal in the state of California and several other states, and it's how does that affect athletes in terms of what, of post-sports recovery, for pain management? What is the research study for?
I think all of the above. I mean, cannabis is an amazing plant to say it, you know, throughout its history had just such a negative, you know, stereotype drawn around it. But the more and more research is being done, we're finding out, you know, how beneficial this plant is, both on the CBD and THC side, anywhere from, you know, pain management to sleep to focus. You know, the CBD is, you know, for your joints and the betterment, just the body betterment. So what UCLA we're trying to do is we're trying to continue to spread the word, educate people, and then we also want to do a study of former players and kind of get a ground number of how many guys actually used during their career, when they used, why they used, what they got from it, so you can kind of hear guys' own experiences. You know, people use it for real reasons. I think that people just think, okay, you smoke weed, you're trying to get high, but there's a lot of benefits from it, and I think, you know, no better to hear from is from former players who've had successful long careers and hear their story and hear why they use it. I think when people start hearing the reasons why, it'll open their eyes, and, you know, the continued research from universities is going to hopefully help change, you know, basketball and professional sport rules, so it can be, you know, in addition to opioids, you can also use cannabis if needed.
Matt Barnes, great stuff, Matt. Look forward to seeing you on the TV side. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy Easter to you. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Doug. Same to you, buddy.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
From the Arizona Cardinals team website, general manager Steve Keim emphasized that they have not yet made a decision on what to do with the number one overall pick. The reason is simple. We have time. And I love the idea of Arizona doing their due diligence. We're not rushing anything. Generally, I think they've probably already made up their mind that this is not Steve Keim being honest with us, even if he is honest saying they do, in fact, have time. And the thing about Steve Keim is, whatever his mind, however it might have been made up initially, he could change it, seeing as that's what he did with his head coach, his offensive coordinators, and maybe even his quarterback. But we do want to rush. We want to know, we want to know, we want to know, we want to know, we want to know. Are you going to take, are you going to take? And all we can do is read tea leaves. My big question is this. If Steve Keim, who has Josh Rosen as his quarterback under rookie control or reasonable contract, if he's not sure that he's the dude, if he was sure that he's the dude, then he wouldn't have had to bring in Kyler Murray. There is no due diligence when you have the guy. It just isn't. And you could say, like, hey, you know, we were just dating and I did go on a date with another woman. And as soon as I went on and she had a half glass of wine and I just knew it wasn't right. Like, okay. Okay. I get it. But they're not dating. They're not just together. They're married. They're under contract. And if you're willing to have that same dinner conversation with somebody else, then you're not with the right person. That just doesn't make any, that doesn't add up. I don't care what your head coach said in college about Kyler Murray or how much he thinks of Kyler Murray or how much Kyler Murray may fit his system, whatever. That doesn't make any sense. Sometimes people just don't have a plan. And look, that's okay. Like, I can be a wing it guy. I can sit down. Some guys like their entire show written out. I want to read it and make it seem like it's reactive when it's really not. It's scripted. You'll listen to some radio shows. I know one in particular that there's an actual script to, which is written by multiple writers, and the person delivers it and you can't tell. And there are some that there's no level of preparation at all. Like, we got no idea what he's going to say. Just turn the microphone on. Those guys take a lot of calls usually. You know? And look, there's also sometimes there's a lot of mistakes made when you wing it. You say things that are wrong because you have a staff of people that are going to help you prepare, put it on your screen, hand you a note. I generally fall on the side of I like it being more organic than scripted. On the other hand, I still like to know where I'm going and have some thoughts that I've already kind of pre-planned for. It does feel like Steve Keim is kind of wing it guy. Yeah, we have time. I haven't figured it out yet.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Antonio Daniels knows what it means to be a junkyard dog. He was a JYD back in the day, playing, of course, winning championships with the San Antonio Spurs. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. He's an analyst for the Oklahoma City Thunder. What's gone so, I mean, outside of the shooting, and it hasn't been good, what's gone so wrong for the Thunder in games one and two?
Well, I mean, I think the shooting is a big issue. You know, when you go 10 to 61 from three in a two-game series, you're not going to beat let alone Portland, but anybody. But outside of that, it's just guys haven't played well individually. And I will continue to say this. Experience in the playoffs matters. Terrence Ferguson doesn't have very much playoff experience, if any. Dennis Schroeder, no playoff experience. Jeremy Grant, very, very little playoff experience. So some of the guys that you are relying on, that you have relied on all year to be impactful and help this team win, they do not have playoff experience. And you started off this playoff on the road. And this is the first time the Thunder have done this in a while. And we all know role players tend to play better at home. So if you start off with home court, maybe it's different. Maybe it's different. Maybe because you're in the confines of Chesapeake Energy Arena, things are a little bit different. But when you start out on the road and you haven't been there before, so you don't really know what you're walking into, now for these role players, it's a huge deal. You can pair that along with the fact that Paul George is not 100% healthy, and the shooting is huge. It is huge if you look at that. 10 for 61 for In a two-game series thus far, if that continues, the Thunder won't win. But I also don't anticipate that continuing.
Russell's had a weird year where, you know, he's on one hand, he's averaged a triple-double, and that's inarguably something incredibly special. On the other hand, the shooting from the three-point line hasn't gotten better, and the free throw shooting has obviously gotten worse. And then you kind of get into a back and forth there with Damian Lillard where, you know, I don't think Lillard does the other things that Russell does nearly as well as Russell does them, but there's such a difference as a shooter and the confidence with which he's shooting the basketball. What are your thoughts on, is Russell right physically? Is it a mental thing? Why he's not shooting the basketball better?
There's been different times throughout the course of this year where he's shot the ball extremely well. He's been really efficient and hasn't shot a lot of three-point shots. You know, when he goes back, and to me, this is the NBA now, though. This is what the NBA has become. It's almost like when your strength is 15 to 17 feet, now the rest of the league is telling you that's not a good shot for you. So Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors, even though the Golden State Warriors have guys with the ability to do both, but they're telling you 15 to 17 feet is no longer a strength. That's a bad shot. So guys are relying on three-point shots and trying to get layups, dunks, and free throws. And the fact of the matter is, sometimes that three-point shot is not everyone's strength. That's not everybody's strength. Sometimes your shot is from 15 to 17 feet. And if you go back 5 or 6 years ago, when Russell Westbrook was in his prime athletically, that 15 to 17 pull-up jump shot that he had was unstoppable, completely unstoppable. So now it's kind of like as the league evolves, guys are trying to evolve with the league. Right or wrong, that's just reality.
All right, so what happens if they don't turn around? I mean, last year, remember, they so badly wanted Paul George. He didn't play well in Utah, and, you know, Russell took a ridiculous number of shots. But then we said, well, you know, they hadn't played together much. Now they've played together for a year, and I would agree with you. You know, you got Jeremy Grant's not playing well. Well, he doesn't have playoff experience. And Ferguson's not playing well, and he doesn't. But you do have Steve Adams. You do have Paul George. You do have Russell Westbrook. And you're playing a team without Nurkic.
Right.
If it doesn't get better in this playoff series, what would the reaction be from the front office?
Man, that's a great question. That is a great question. But you would think that something would change. I don't know what that change consists of. But for everything to look the same as it does this year, next year, I would highly doubt that if this team does not find its identity in these next 4 to 5 games. Because the fact of the matter is this, Doug, they got to win 4 of the next 5. But if you go back to the regular season, they also beat Portland 4 times in a row. So the fact that they know that they can do that exists. And here's my thing. I honestly feel if the Thunder go back to OKC on Friday and win, and on Sunday and win, that they'll win this series. But if they allow Portland to get one in Oklahoma City, it's going to be very, very difficult, almost impossible, to win out.
Oh, no question. No question. They have to win these
right.
These next two games. So Paul George was having this unbelievable season. And is it just injuries? Is that what we're going to chalk this up to?
Yeah, it's not. See, I think Jeff Van Gundy said it the best the other day. There's a drastic difference between a reason and an excuse. And we'll see the significance or severity of Paul George's injury when the season's over. But for him to come out certain games and put up 40 points, and then he can't play again for another 4 or 5 days or touch a ball for another 4 or 5 days, that's something pretty significant. You know, you look at the Houston game where he hit the game-winning shot against James Harden and the Houston Rockets, and then he didn't touch a ball again until game one against Portland. So that tells you something's not right. And just the up and down of his play, and you look at game one where he shot 15 threes. 15 threes in game one. One of the things Paul George is really good at is the balance of understanding when to attack, when not to attack, when to shoot threes. But if your shoulder's bothering you, you're a lot less likely to attack that rim and seek contact. So post-All-Star break, Paul George has not been the same because he's not healthy. And I don't think that's an excuse. I just think that's a reason.
I tend to agree with you. When your shoulders, a shoulder thing, and the thing about shoulders is you can be feeling fine, and then all of a sudden, you know, it can snag on you at the very wrong moment, and then you're hesitant to ever look up at shooting the basketball. Forget about having to defend the defensive end. What about Billy? There's always been the thought that colleges will come calling, and last year they kind of doubled down on Billy when he could have walked out the door. How much of his messages are still getting through?
I would think so. Honestly, I would think so. I think it's very difficult to get to this point and just shut off the head coach at this point. I just don't see that happening. And honestly, I feel like Billy gets a lot of unjust blame because, and it's not just Billy. You can look at different coaches throughout this league. When the team is playing well, we praise the players. And when the team struggles, we criticize the coach.
Correct.
Fact of the matter is, Billy Donovan's not shooting free throws. Billy Donovan's not shooting threes, nor does he come out of there with a jersey on. But all are held accountable. All are held accountable. And that's something I learned playing in San Antonio. No one's without accountability when a team struggles. So, yes, Billy carries some responsibility the same way Russell Westbrook does, Paul George, Steven Adams, all the way down to Deontay Burton and those other guys who don't get a lot of minutes. But I honestly feel Billy has done a really good job of what he's been given. The best pure shooter that they have is gone. Alex Abrines has to leave the team midway through the year. The best on-ball defender that they have hasn't played since the middle of last year in Andre Robertson. So you're missing two significant pieces that you thought would be impactful to this year. Those guys aren't there anymore. I think Billy's done a pretty good job adjusting to what he's been given.
I tend to agree. The only part where you would say, okay, why are they shooting so many threes, right? And you're like, well, Portland wants them to shoot threes. Like, yes, why? That would be the only part where is the part where he goes like, hey, fellas, we got to stop taking them, right? Because that's what Barkley said last night.
Right. And I get it. I completely understand that. But it's a situation where the Thunder have shot 35% on the year from the three-point line all year long. If they shoot 20% in game one, they win that game. If they shoot 20%, let alone 35. And it's the difference between chucking threes and launching threes and shooting good ones. If you go back and you look at these 61 three-point shots that are taken, I will probably guarantee you there are less than 10 of them that are bad shots, that are really bad shots. You know what I mean? Shots in transition.
Listen, Antonio, you're preaching the choir. I started the show saying, look, I do think water finds its level. I think they're likely to win the next two games. On the other hand, like I am, and I also thought that the officiating really didn't help them, especially early. You know, there's a lot of flopping. Even my son, he's 10 years old. He's like, why do they always flop so much? It's like, man, this is
right.
It's just the officials struggle to try and gain control of the series, and you end up getting, you know, Russell into foul trouble early on, and it dramatically changes the game, and then Lillard ran a fever, and there's no kind of coming back, no matter how well they played late in the game. That said, you do get to point out, you have no margin for error, is even you pointed out.
Agreed.
You go down 3-1, you got to go back to Portland a couple times, it does not bode well for your playoff future.
I could not agree with you more. That's why these next two games in Oklahoma City are must-win games. Are must-win games. I love the fact after game two last night, Russell Westbrook took complete accountability and responsibility for the way he played yesterday. He called it unacceptable. He said, you know what? I can't play like that and expect us to win. The way I played yesterday was unacceptable, and I will be better moving forward. So my interest, especially if Paul George is healthy and didn't have any carryover from yesterday's game as far as his shoulder is concerned, and now Russell Westbrook, being down 0-2, understands the severity and urgency of the situation, I'm interested to see what team takes his floor on Friday at home in OKC.
Me too. Antonio, great stuff. Awesome energy. Enjoy the series this weekend. Thanks for joining us.
For sure. Appreciate you, Doug.
All right. My thanks to Antonio Daniels, who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder.